You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Wire.
Sitting on the beach watching transnational criminal scum neoliberal filth.
Yes, on International Desk this week, we are going to China, where former Premier Li Peng has died in Beijing, aged 90, last week. He was the Chinese head of government during 1988 and 1998, and to say he's influential in changing China's future during that time is an understatement.
香港终于回到了伟大祖国的怀抱。
Li Peng was born in Shanghai in 1928 in a communist family. His father, Li Shuoxun, was a communist revolutionary executed in Haikou by the Chinese Nationalist Party, the Kuomintang, in 1931, and was seen as a martyr for the communist cause by the Communist Party. His mother, Zhao Juntao, was the sister of Zhao Ziyan, one of the founders of the party itself. In the late 1940s, under the relatively warmer relations between China and the Soviet Union, Beijing decided to send 21 students with good academic and family backgrounds to Moscow in order to be trained as professionals. Li was one of them. He was sent to study hydroelectric engineering at the Moscow Power Engineering Institute in 1948. After returning to China in 1955, he started to work in managing China's power network, including heading Beijing's power bureau in the mid-1970s. His political big break came in 1983, having appointed as the Vice Premier of China and becoming a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, the body that compromises the top party leaders. 4 years later, Li was elected by the Central Committee to the Standing Committee of the party's Politburo, involving him directly into the process of making major political decisions. The following year, in 1988, Li was appointed premier, China's version of the head of government. His place in the party that time was only the second to Deng Xiaoping, China's then paramount leader. Yet at that time, Li's accession to the premiership was seen as against the times, since in both politically and economically, he was the spokesperson of the old conservative hardline revolutionary in the 1980s. Contrary to other liberal leaders in the party that time, such as Zhao Ziyang and Hu Yaobong, who both advocated reforms for China's economy to transition to a more market-based one, Li and many party elders feared that the instability opened up by any significant reforms would threaten to undermine the authority of the Communist Party, and they called for greater centralization of economic controls and stricter prohibitions against Western influences. 1 year into his premiership, in May 1989, following the death of Hu Yaobong, one of the leaders of the Communist Party's liberal wing, tens of thousands of students and Beijing citizens gathered at Tiananmen Square to demonstrate for more economic liberalization and political reform. Li was strongly against the democracy movement, and he made no secret of that. From the start of the protests, he had refused to negotiate with protesting students and strongly advocated to end the protests militarily. On May 19th, the conservative wing of the Communist Party won the backing of Supreme Leader Deng Xiaoping, who defined the protests as an, quote, anti-party and anti-socialist disturbance, and the liberals inside the party leadership were forced out. On the same day, Li imposed martial law and deployed soldiers to the streets of Beijing, declaring the protests posed a, quote, grave threat to the future of the People's Republic and it must be stopped.
种种情况表明，如果再不迅速扭转局面，稳定局势就会导致全国范围的大动乱。我们国家的改革开放和司法事业，甚至于我们的广大的革命的先烈，用鲜血创造出来的中华人民共和国。
的前途和命运都面临着严重的威胁。
Almost 2 weeks later, on June the 3rd, the remaining conservatives in the Standing Committee of the Politburo, as well as party elders, agreed to clear Tiananmen Square so, quote, the riot can be halted and order be restored to the capital by any means. Armed soldiers and tanks advanced into the streets of Beijing throughout the night. Here's the BBC's news bulletin of the events, followed by a report from Julian O'Halloran for Newsnight. Please note the word Peking inside the clips is the romanized name for Beijing.
Tanks and troops are patrolling the streets of central Peking after the bloody operation to crush student-led protests. Some reports say more than 2,000 civilians were killed in last night's army assault on Tiananmen Square.
The approach to Tiananmen Square by troops from the west of Peking last night was typical of everything that has followed since then, and completely contradicts the Chinese government's claim that its target is a handful of hooligans, criminals, and counter-revolutionaries. As the army units approached the center of the city, they were firing into side streets, killing and injuring scores of incomprehending and unarmed men, women, and children. In a few minutes, a city that had been entirely peaceful was being turned not into a battle zone, but a killing ground. When the first armored vehicles approached Tiananmen Square, people suddenly realized the security forces' deadly intent. It was only then, in fear and anger, that the crowds began to resist, hurling any object they could find at the military hardware and making makeshift and totally inadequate barricades. At dawn, more armored vehicles were moving into Tiananmen Square. Then we could just make out the rubble of the Statue of Democracy, erected by idealistic art students last Tuesday, now destroyed by the hardline forces who have gained the upper hand in China's power struggle. At 8 a.m., there were thousands of people in the Avenue of Everlasting Peace, some newly arrived to see what was going on in the square. The burning buses expressed the feelings of those who had witnessed the worst of the night's violence. 2 hours later, the situation appeared to have stabilized. A crowd of 1,000 or more civilians facing a line of troops several deep, about 200 yards from them, at the northeast entrance to the square. As I walked towards that point, accompanied by others, taking what seemed like a leisurely Sunday morning cycle ride or stroll, the troops, without warning, opened up again with a burst of rifle fire lasting a minute or more. We fled down the wide avenue that offered virtually no effective cover. One man, felled by a bullet, was carried past me into a nearby building. The luckier injured were put in ambulances whose crews showed exceptional courage. As troops opened up again in our direction half an hour later, this time with bursts of automatic fire, the injured and dying were loaded onto cycle trailers to be ferried to a hospital half a mile away. These scenes were to be repeated for much of the day, as the numbers of dead and wounded vastly outnumbered the ambulances available. While many had been shot, others had been beaten, clubbed, or stoned by troops making forays into the crowd. And as the day progressed, it became clear there'd been similar carnage on an equal or greater scale in other areas of the city.
After the crackdown at Tiananmen Square, Li's status within the Communist Party was solidified, as the party leadership believed that limiting Li's career would be admitting that they were wrong by suppressing the protests, which could cause major damage to the party's popularity and unity. In the rest of his premiership, Li continued to launch mega-projects, including the Three Gorges Project, which is a dam across the Yangtze River, China's largest river. It intended to increase the Yangtze River's shipping capacity, reduce the potential for floods downstream by providing flood storage space and produce more electricity, as well as limiting greenhouse emissions. However, the cost of the project skyrocketed out of proportion, and the consequences from the project meant archaeological and cultural sites are permanently flooded, and more than 1 million people are displaced. Al Jazeera's Melissa Chan has highlighted what the dam meant for fishermen downstream.
Trying to fill the dam to capacity has meant stopping water from flowing here to Yueyang, the water marks clearly showing where the river level usually peaks, and a long brown slope of riverbed left naked to the surface. The shortage of water, compounded by the worst drought in years, has affected tens of millions of people who live along this river that cuts across central China, especially the fishermen, who have waited for months with nothing to do. Today there is rain, a welcome change, but not enough to make a difference.
Even if it rains, if they don't allow the water to flow downstream from the three gorges, then there won't be any water, and it just becomes a dry riverbed.
There hasn't been much water, and when there is, the government has restrictions saying you can't fish here or you can't fish there. That's the situation.
Even Lee's premiership finished in 1998, and he retired from Chinese politics altogether in 2003. He still has a strong influence in Beijing and Chinese politics, as his family has a monopoly over Chinese energy industry. Thanks to his father's position in China, Li Peng's eldest son, Li Xiaopeng, was put in charge of the state-owned Huaneng Power International, China's largest power generation company, in 1999. He later entered politics, becoming the governor of Shanxi province during 2008 and 2014, and was appointed as China's transport minister in 2016. Li's daughter, Li Xiaoling, also used the family name to secure a senior position at the state-owned China Power International Development Corporation, and was accused of having a lavish lifestyle. She was also named in the Panama Papers as the beneficial owners of a Liechtenstein foundation that was the sole shareholder of a company in the British Virgin Islands. Yes, and the official obituary for Li Peng from the Chinese government, it has described him as a, quote, major pathfinder, a faithful practitioner, and an active promoter of China's socialist market economy, as well as a significant leader in developing socialist democracy and rule of law with Chinese characteristics, and he is a great loss to the country and the party. While on the other hand, Wu Kaixi, one of the leaders of the Tiananmen protests in 1989, has tweeted immediately after Li's death that, quote, Li Peng was an asshole, now he is a dead asshole. Another protest leader from 1989, Wang Dan, has said, even though he's now dead, Li Peng must still be held accountable for his role in the Tiananmen Square crackdown. But going to more a contemporary side, I don't think it seems to Li Peng's death would affect a lot in Chinese politics, because as you can see, the obituary, it has described Li's role during the 1989 protests as taking a clear stance, and along with most of the members of the political bureau of the party central committee, they made decisive moves to stop the turmoil and the counter-revolutionary riot and stabilize domestic situations. And that's pretty much the same terms that Beijing used year after year to fend off questions about what happened in 1989 in Beijing.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.